down. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner talking home run. Touchdown. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner like.
All right. Hello, everybody. It is Monday, March 31st, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I am your host, H. James K., and today we're going to be talking about spring football, the unloved, often forgotten, redheaded stepchild of the game of football. Today we are going to be delving into absolutely everything you could possibly need to know about football being played in the spring. The leagues that have happened, the mistakes they've made, the things that have worked, the things that haven't worked, stars, success stories, failures, incompetence, the entire saga of spring football. Then we will talk about, looking forward, what the ultimate fate of spring football is in the modern consciousness. Now, let's get into it. So where does spring football come from? It is generally understood that football is played from September to February, depending on the league. Sometimes that's September to November in high school, or September to mid-January in college football. But the game is played starting in the fall, all the way through winter, into February. That's when football lives. And as you'll see, a lot of other sports avoid those months like the damn plague. Baseball ends in October. Basketball doesn't even really come into its own until the football season has really ended. Even as it competes in October, November, December, it isn't really until the football is out of the way that we really get into the NBA. So, this avoidance of football boils down to one simple fact. America loves football. It is almost a religion in certain circles in this country. I said a couple of weeks ago that the NFL took a day of the week from God, and while that might sound hyperbolic, it's really true. More people watch football on Sundays than go to church these days, which is crazy, because just a couple of decades ago, that wasn't true. But that is the modern reality of football. These days, you can watch football every day of the week from October till December, whether that's Mac football on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursday night football, college football on Fridays, college football on a Saturday, NFL Sunday, Monday. You can watch football every day of the week if you're so inclined. And that's just American football. There's also Mexican leagues that play football. There's football in Germany. There's the entire Canadian Football League to talk about, which is its own can of worms that I'm not even going to get to. But this desire and affinity for football penetrates absolutely every aspect of modern American society. And this obviously leads people to wonder about why can't we play football in the spring, or why can't we play football in the summer? Why do we have to avoid those months and give them up to auto racing and baseball and basketball and hockey and all this other stuff? Why do we have to cede these months when football can just be the invincible colossus that occupies every month, every day of the week, every year, all the time? So, the NFL obviously owns football. They command 40 million people for even crappy 0-15 football teams, because that's what the NFL does. The college football playoff will get 27 million viewers for one game. Hockey, basketball, baseball, they couldn't even hope to get those numbers. Maybe the World Series, but even then, you're really pushing it. That's the difference in desire and fandom and affinity for football in American culture. With the Super Bowl ending in mid-February, and baseball not beginning until the end of March, and basketball winding down, getting ready for the playoffs, there's a gap there. Motorsports doesn't really get going until May, into the dog days of summer. So that gap where there's no football before colleges start playing in September has always been there. And now there's always been prospecting businessmen who are like, I can make it work. I'm the one who can bring spring football into the modern world and create a league that will last. Most often the time they fail. And we're going to get into that in a couple of moments where there's a desire, but the situation's never been right. or the money's not right, or there's corruption, or incompetence, or just dumb bad luck, hand of God shit. Either way, it's one of these things where the sport is right there, the potential is there, the desire for it is there, and yet none of these leagues have ever really made an impression. None of them last longer than only a couple of years. So, to truly understand the journey that is spring football in America, we really have to talk about the history of some of these different leagues that have come and gone over the decades. So, to start off, we're going to start with the underfunded, unfocused, and unlikely to last. These are leagues that just didn't work. They came and went. First of all, let's talk about the Extreme Football League of 2001, which was owned by WWE owner Vince McMahon. The league had 8 teams, broken down into an Eastern Division and a Western Division. The Eastern Division had the Birmingham Thunderbolts, the Chicago Enforcers, the New York / New Jersey Hitmen, and the Orlando Rage. The Western Division had the Las Vegas Outlaws, the Los Angeles Extreme, the Memphis Maniacs, and the San Francisco Demons. Vince McMahon aimed to bring a decidedly WWE showy flair to football, along with a more violent game, with more presentation, which was very much part of the attitude era of the WWE at the time on television. So, that was the aim. But in reality, all that happened is a gimmicky version of football with awful on-field play and stupid things like jerseys that would say nicknames or slogans instead of the people's names. Like, the most famous is obviously, "He Hate Me." I don't know who "He Hate Me" is. I just know that he was a short black running back who played for one XFL team. I don't know his name. I just know that he was "He Hate Me," and his number, I'm pretty sure, was 30. But see, that's the stupidity of the original XFL. And that horrible on-field product, which was comprised of has-been NFL veteran quarterbacks and players you've never heard of, declined in viewership and attendance pretty precipitously until they crowned the championship and then immediately folded up and just went away because the league didn't make any money. And part of it, I think at least, is it wasn't football. It was football, but it was gimmicky, fake, pretend football. It wasn't just the game. And fans know the difference. Fans know the difference between real football and wanting to be football, but not committed to just being the game that we all love. Now, moving on from the XFL, you have the original United Football League, which operated from 2009 to 2012. It was owned by Bill Hambrecht, who was a business owner at the time. The league had 5 teams, though there were only 4 of them at any one time. There was the California Redwoods, which turned into the Sacramento Mountain Lions. There was the Las Vegas Locomotives, or the Locos, which were the only team in the entire league that never moved or changed its name or folded. They were there for every single season. There was the New York Citadels, which became the Hartford Colonials before they folded after the 2010 season. There was the Florida Tuskers, which folded after 2010 and were subsequently replaced by the Virginia Destroyers. Then finally, there were the Omaha Nighthawks, which were a 2010 expansion team that lasted until the end of the league in 2012. The problem with the original United Football League was none of the owners had the money or capital to really absorb the initial financial losses that the league would encounter. It had poor ratings, incredibly poor attendance. It was on, like, Versus, I think, on television. It wasn't even on, like, a main headline channel. And ultimately, they had trouble paying players all the time, and there was always issues with equipment and locations and all this other stuff. So the league was a zombie league from the moment it began existing. And then eventually it folded up midway through the 2012 season, unable to pay players, unable to monitor facilities and everything else. It was a perpetual cycle of instability that, as evidenced by the short, fleeting history of the league, it was never going to work. Now, maybe the most tragic of the underfunded, incompetent leagues is the Alliance of American Football. The Alliance of American Football was a short fly-by-night league that played for 5 weeks in 2019. It was started by Bill Polian and Charlie Ebersol, who had vast experience in NFL circles, and the designs of the league was to become a minor league of the NFL. It was supposed to be a league where NFL teams would send the bottom rung of their depth chart to these teams to get experience during the NFL offseason so they could then come back coached up and well-trained and ready to go for the NFL season. The Alliance of American Football, or the AAF, as everyone called it, had an Eastern Conference, which was the Atlanta Legends, the Birmingham Iron, the Memphis Express, and the Orlando Apollos. And then they had a Western Conference, which was the Arizona Hotshots. Excellent name, amazing uniforms, great local integration. There were the Salt Lake Stallions, the San Antonio Commanders, and the San Diego Fleet. Now, the Alliance of American Football almost ended before it even began. It had financial problems almost from the start. The league was announced in 2016. It started life in 2018 with an eye for the 2019 season. But even before the league started, they were already looking for a benefactor because they had several other benefactors lined up, people who were going to invest money. But one of them, a minority owner of the Minnesota Vikings, was arrested by the DOJ for money laundering and other financial crimes, and his multi-million dollar donation just never went. So the league turned to Thomas Dundon, who was a venture capitalist in Silicon Valley. Dundon became the majority owner of the league on February 18th, 2019, which was just after the second week of the season. By then, there were already rumors that the league was struggling to pay players, even after only 2 weeks. So, after 8 weeks of play and $70 million of investments from Dundon, he made the unilateral decision as the controlling owner of the Alliance of American Football to shutter the league. Fans were outraged. Players were stunned. Their health care, their housing, all of it was just gone. Poof. Many of them were just released from their contracts, even if they had extra money they were supposed to be owed. But the league just folded up and went away. And it was really sad because there were teams like the Arizona Hotshots and the San Diego Fleet and the Orlando Apollos that were getting pretty decent engagement from their local communities. But the league itself was just, it was doomed from the start. It never had solid enough ownership to allow it to absorb the initial punishment that any new football league is going to have to endure before it can start to grow and expand and gain any semblance of permanence. So, moving on from incompetent, underfunded, doomed from the start leagues, now we've got to talk about the, I call it, Hand of God. So, the Hand of God category has exactly one football league in it. The revival of the XFL in 2020. The league was a relaunch by Vince McMahon under one of his subsidiary companies with Oliver Luck as the league commissioner, and it was trying to get out in front of the newly revived United States Football League, which was going to be starting in 2021. The XFL 2.0 was a total rebrand of it. It ditched all the hokey, showy, we're going to bring more violence to the game, and all the really fakey, flashy, he hate me shit. And it was just trying to be a small-time spring football league. The league itself had 8 teams. It had an Eastern Division, which was the DC Defenders, the New York Guardians, the St. Louis Battlehawks, and the Tampa Bay Vipers. In the Western Division, it had the Dallas Renegades, the Houston Roughnecks, the Seattle Sea Dragons, and the Los Angeles Wildcats. Fan reaction to the XFL 2.0 was absolutely brilliant. It was getting great reactions on social media. Fan engagement in the crowds was really good in several stadiums. There were some really great storylines like PJ Walker and Jordan Tiamu. And then COVID. Yeah. Then COVID happened. And COVID killed the league, because initially Vince McMahon was just going to keep on going, you know, damn the torpedoes, we can't let the lockdown shut us down. And then the NBA had 3 COVID cases in 1 game for 3 players. And lockdown rules got really, really harsh, and Vince McMahon couldn't stomach the costs of canceling the season, and the league was just gone, kaput, shut down, everyone fired, like it never even happened. And it was really sad, because as someone who was really into the XFL 2.0, it was going to work. It lost a lot of money initially, and Vince McMahon had said that he understood that going in, but the fans loved it. DC Defenders fans, Battlehawks fans, there were so many fans and so many cities that were really latching onto it, and then COVID killed it. And that one was a big blow, because it had so much momentum, just like the Alliance of American Football in 2019, that many viewed it'll be hard for fans to really latch onto these leagues because they don't even last a year. The last 2 iterations just didn't work. Now, this obviously isn't true, because more leagues have come around and there is currently a spring league, but before we can look forward, we have to look even further back. Now it's time for spring football's last great hope, the original United States Football League of 1983 to 1986. The original USFL was founded by David Dixon, whose initial idea for the league came to him all the way back in 1965. The league itself had a total of 18 teams. This is where it gets crazy. So the original 12 teams were the Arizona Wranglers, the Birmingham Stallions, the Boston Breakers, the Chicago Blitz, the Denver Gold, the Los Angeles Express, the Michigan Panthers, the New Jersey Generals, the Oakland Invaders, the Philadelphia Stars, the Tampa Bay Bandits, and the Washington Federals. After a reasonably successful 1983 season, there were several expansion teams in 1984, those being the Houston Gamblers, the Jacksonville Bulls, the Memphis Showboats, the Oklahoma Outlaws, the Pittsburgh Maulers, and the San Antonio Gunslingers. But behind the scenes, financial troubles abounded. The league itself was founded under the assumption that every owner of the league was going to be rich enough where they could absorb initial financial setbacks. Guys like Donald Trump, who owned the New Jersey Generals. So it's one of these things where all of the owners had money. And because they all had money, they wanted to spend that money. Originally, according to the Dixon plan, as it was called, there was going to be a hard salary cap, a low salary cap of $1.5 million that was supposed to take up your entire roster's salaries. But almost immediately, teams started flouting that rule and signing players and blowing their salaries way out of proportion. These financial decisions, while they helped the league grow and helped fan engagement, ultimately led to an insane level of uncertainty. All of this financial uncertainty led to several teams either folding, moving, changing names, changing locations. It was crazy. So, to start, Arizona merged with the Oklahoma Outlaws for the 1985 season and became the Arizona Outlaws. Boston moved to New Orleans for 1984, and then Portland for 1985. Chicago just folded after the 1984 season. The Michigan Panthers merged with the Oakland Invaders for the 1985 season. Philadelphia moved to Baltimore in 1985, and the Washington Federals moved to Orlando and became the Orlando Renegades for 1985. The league had a very unique regional draft system, which meant that players from colleges ended up playing for teams in their area, which resulted in a number of future Hall of Famers and star players joining the teams in regions where they were already famous from their time in college. These are players such as Jim Kelly, Steve Young, Reggie White, Sam Mills, Gary Zimmerman, and Herschel Walker. All of these players played for the USFL, even though they had attention from the NFL, and this gave the league insane attention. especially Jim Kelly and Herschel Walker. So, as previously mentioned, with costs soaring and finances just out of control, things got kind of desperate, and that led to the birth of one of the craziest ideas I've ever seen. And this effort was spearheaded by future President Donald John Trump, who was then the owner of the New Jersey Generals. He had the idea of playing the 1986 season in the fall, directly against college football and the NFL, hoping to force an AFL-NFL merger like happened in the 60s. Many owners were very weary of this, but the league was going to go for it. At the same time, they brought an antitrust lawsuit against the NFL, hoping to force the merger so that some of the teams, who were all bleeding money at this point, could be absorbed into the NFL and saved from certain destruction. So, the court case proceeded and was thrown out for lack of standing because it was frivolous and it wasn't going to work. The NFL expressed zero interest in absorbing the United States Football League into a merger. So, with several teams folding and uncertainty everywhere and insane spiraling costs, the 1986 season just never happened. And the UFL declared bankruptcy and just folded up shop. And that was that for the biggest, most popular spring football league ever. So, we've talked about the biggest failures, the biggest almost successes. Now it's time to look at what's actually happening now, which is spring football's great comeback. So, the XFL returned again. XFL 3.0. This time, it's founded by Dwayne The Rock Johnson, his ex-wife Danny Garcia, and Redbird Capital founder Jerry Cardinale. They bought the XFL and all of its assets for $14 million, including $9.2 million in outstanding debts that were owed. They bought all this from Vince McMahon in 2022 with an eye of reviving the league for the 2023 season. The league had a new focus. It was now focused on making the game fun and exciting while also shortening the length of games, and it had a new ethos, which was Player 54. Player 54 being, much like Dwayne Johnson, the guy who just doesn't make the roster. That guy who's forgotten, who gets maybe sent to the practice squad or doesn't get the chance to play. And they seized on that and made that the really big selling point, where these are the guys who could make the NFL if they just had the chance and were giving them that chance. So the league had eight teams, and some of these teams are holdovers from the XFL 2.0. Like, the league's North Division had the DC Defenders, the Seattle Dragons — they dropped the C in Sea Dragons — the St. Louis Battlehawks, and the Vegas Vipers, which moved from Tampa Bay to Las Vegas. They also had a South Division, which was the Arlington Renegades, which were originally the Dallas Renegades, but have been renamed to Arlington, the Houston Roughnecks, the Orlando Guardians, which moved from New York to Orlando, and the San Antonio Brahmas, which replaced the Los Angeles Wildcats at the behest of Dwayne Johnson, considering one of his nicknames was the Brahma Bull and his love and affinity for the city of San Antonio, Texas. So the XFL 3.0 had a number of star players, like A.J. McCarron, the career journeyman backup from the NFL, who decided to ask for a release from his NFL contract, where he was making the league minimum $300,000 a year, to play for significantly less so that his children, his young boys, could watch their father play meaningful snaps as a starting quarterback in professional football. And that storyline was like wildfire for the XFL 3.0 in 2023. You also had quarterback Jordan Tiamu, who was the 2023 season MVP. You had running back Abram Smith, future NFL backup quarterback Ben DiNucci, and the king of spring himself, quarterback Luis Perez. We'll get into Luis Perez later. He's got one hell of a story. So The league operated out of a hub model where every single team operates and practices out of Arlington, Texas. That's where the facility is and where all the practice facilities are. And when it comes time for games, they hop on a plane and they fly to the destination for the home team, whoever it is. They play the game, hop on planes, and fly back to Arlington. That's how it works. It saves them a lot of money, whereas the Alliance of American Football had to have practice facilities in every location and housing for all the players. It's just easier having everything centralized in this one hub that is Arlington, Texas. Now, not everything was sunshine and roses. Financial losses were expected, and the 2023 season lost $70 million. But the league looked to be in good shape after 2023, and those losses were expected. The understanding was, we're going to absorb losses for several years before this league becomes profitable. While the XFL was a burgeoning success, we also have to talk about the other rival spring football league that started its play in 2022, the second iteration of the United States Football League, which played two seasons. It was founded by Daryl Johnson and Fox Corporation in 2021, with Fox being a 50% owner. It started playing in 2022 using a business model similar to the XFL, where all the games were played in only four stadiums with no fans or minimal fans, and everyone used the same hub city for all their practices and everything. So this model allowed them to save considerable money on rentals for stadiums and facilities and planes and people and food and staff and all of these other things that you need for a home game at a whole bunch of NFL stadiums or soccer stadiums or whatever. So the league itself had eight teams. It had a North Division, which was the newly revived Michigan Panthers, the New Jersey Generals, the Philadelphia Stars, and the Pittsburgh Maulers. The South Division had the Birmingham Stallions, the Houston Gamblers, the Memphis Showboats, and the New Orleans Breakers. Notable players of the USFL were wide receiver Kevontae Turpin, who is currently playing in the NFL, quarterback Case Cookus, and quarterback Ben DiNucci, as I mentioned earlier, who played in the USFL in 2022 before leaving to play in the XFL in 2023. Due to the fact that the USFL had that hub model, as I mentioned, they actually posted a profit in 2022 of $7.5 million compared to the $70 million in losses of the XFL. Now, those two teams had reasonably successful 2023 seasons, and going into 2024, it looked promising. Before we get into what happened to those two leagues, I find it important that we have to really explore, what role does spring football play in American sports? Because that informs the current iteration of all those sports leagues and their vision going forward. So the big thing with spring football is it provides new opportunities for players, whether that's for players who have been in the NFL and have lost favor or those who never even got a chance. It allows them the opportunity to get on the field and play meaningful games. Guys like Kevontae Turpin, who was the kick returner for the Dallas Cowboys, he got his start with the newly revived New Jersey Generals. He actually was league MVP in 2022 as a kick returner. Now he's a Pro Bowler in the NFL. You had PJ Walker, who was so impressive in the 2020 XFL season that he's been a consistent second and third string quarterback in the NFL ever since. He never returned for spring football again. You have AJ McCarron, who became a media darling after he led an insane 18-point comeback in like 1 minute and 20 seconds at the end of a game in 2023, and then gave a tearful explanation of his reasoning for joining the XFL, wanting to play in front of his boys and show them what he could do in front of the cameras and on the field and everything, and it became a media sensation. You have guys like Luis Perez, the king of spring, who has crafted a career out of spring football. Perez has played in every season of spring football since 2019. He played in the AAF's Birmingham Iron. After that, he played for the New York Guardians in the 2020 XFL. After that, for the 2021 season, Luis Perez played for the little-known Jousters of the Spring League, which is no longer with us. After that, he went to the USFL for the 2022 season, where he played for the newly revived New Jersey Generals. In 2023, he played for the newly revived XFL 3.0, playing for the hapless Vegas Vipers, before being traded to the Arlington Renegades, where he led them on a late-season surge and an upset victory over the DC Defenders to win the 2023 XFL Championship. In 2024, Perez returned to the Renegades, though the season was disappointing, finishing 3-7 on the year. Now, Perez returns for a third season with the Arlington Renegades, and they actually won their first game this last weekend. The Spring Leagues, on top of providing new opportunities for players, also give a chance to test out new rules. The revivals of the XFL and the USFL have brought with them new ideas about transparency around officiating, where officials are mic'd up while they're deliberating over penalties, and more review of officials, and you can hear play calls of the coaches, and the players are mic'd up, and you get all this more access. And the XFL had new rules about extra points, where you could do a one-point, two-point, or three-point conversion, and there was no kickoffs for extra points. Or new versions of a kickoff where the players stand close together and nobody moves until the ball is caught, and all of these things that ended up getting adopted by the NFL, some of them. So it allows the game of football to innovate when the NFL is often very reluctant to change, and college football is just its own universe with its own rules and its own setup and everything. This all helps us understand where the league can kind of fit in and what it can try to do and how it can push forward the game of football while also keeping the game of football in the American consciousness year-round. That brings us to the present. After the 2023 season, the XFL and the USFL had a merger where each of them ditched a couple of teams and combined into a newly reformed United Football League, the second United Football League. The merger meant that the leadership of both the USFL and the XFL combined with the leadership of the XFL kind of taking over, while Fox Corp was also a 50% owner in the new UFL. And four teams from each league joined the new league, but the XFL brought five brands with it. So the DC Defenders, the St. Louis Battlehawks, the Houston Roughnecks, the Arlington Renegades, and the San Antonio Brahmas joined the Michigan Panthers, the Memphis Showboats, and the Birmingham Stallions in the new UFL. But the Houston Roughnecks brand was then given to the Houston Gamblers USFL team, who then took over that slot in the league. So you had the XFL division and the USFL division, where there was four XFL teams in the XFL division, and then there were three USFL teams and an XFL brand in the USFL division. It was all very confusing. But ultimately, this combination of leagues took the top talent from both leagues, put them together into one brand, and allowed the league to put a good product on the field instead of warring with each other for players and attention and fans and viewers and everything. This new league, the newly created United Football League, had a pretty successful season, with the Birmingham Stallions of the USFL winning their third straight championship after dominating the 2022 and 2023 USFL seasons and then winning the UFL championship in 2024 with a score of 25-0 over the San Antonio Brahmas. Now, heading into 2025, the UFL has positives and negatives. It has troubles, which are undeniable. It struggles with attendance. The average attendance of games not in St. Louis was roughly 10 to 12,000 people, which isn't good enough. That's just not enough people to be at all sustainable. The original XFL of 2020 was averaging around 20,000 fans per game, which is where I talk about how COVID really may have doomed spring football because a lot of fans just never came back. Their appetites changed or they got disillusioned with all the upheaval and just never bought back in again. On top of attendance, we also have other struggles which are arguably more dangerous to the UFL. The growing problem is struggle to pay players a decent wage. There's talk of strikes, of a unionization push among the players, and there's just this, there's great upheaval where these players are like, we're sacrificing our body on a very physical game and we're not making enough money. Quarterbacks average about $25,000 to $50,000 for a season, which is pitiful compared to NFL practice squad salaries, which are like $120,000. Now, obviously, the NFL and the UFL are a different planet, but still, it does pose a problem for the United Football League, where can they pay players enough to get players who are good players to want to play for the league? Now, these both attendance and paying players kind of lead into a lack of profits. The UFL really struggled with losses. It had a $60 million financial loss for the 2024 season. Now, they spun this as expected and they saw some good things, but a loss is still a loss. And if that loss doesn't shrink for the 2025 season, does the league come back for 2026? Who knows? But there is positives for the league. So attendance in St. Louis is still absolutely insane. So the 2024 UFL season saw the St. Louis BattleHawks average 35,000 fans per game. 35,000. They're the only team in the entire league that has an actual home field advantage, where if they're on a third down defensive stand, their crowd gets loud as hell. It's the only team in the entire league that has anything even close to that. The DC Defenders, a little bit, but it's nothing like BattleHawks games. BattleHawks games had as many as 40,000 fans for certain games. It's crazy. And the St. Louis fans have really embraced the league. They're the true Cinderella success story of spring football is St. Louis fans deserve a team. They love football and they want football back. And they have really embraced the UFL. They've got slogans and merch and they come to games dressed as eagles or hawks or other birds of prey. They chant things like "Caw is Law" and they paint themselves blue and they're rabid fans. And they don't care if it's not the NFL. They just want to love and enjoy football again. And that has also helped the league in other ways, where TV ratings for 2024 were above expectations, with 100 million plus more viewers compared to the combined XFL-USFL 2023 season ratings, which is incredibly encouraging. If they carry that over for 2025, that's absolutely huge. On top of that, social media engagement was up 34% year over year for both leagues combined. So there are good encouraging things like the BattleHawks and TV and social media, even if there are troubling storm clouds on the horizon. So, looking even further forward, what is the future of spring football? So, the UFL has a chance to do something no other major spring league has ever done, which is play a fifth season. So right now, if you take XFL 3.0 and USFL 2.0 and combine them, this league has been playing in some form or fashion since 2022, making the 2025 season its fourth season. Really, this is more like year 2.5, if you really kind of want to think of it that way. But even still, the teams have been around long enough where some of them are getting kind of established, like the Birmingham Stallions. They've been around for years at this point. So it allows the teams and the league itself to start establishing a sense of permanence. Like, this is, if you count the 2020 season, this is year 5 for the St. Louis BattleHawks. They're an established part of St. Louis sports at this point, with season ticket holders and fans of their own. So if the league can keep going, we might start seeing entrenched interests and entrenched fandoms in all of these leagues, assuming the league can turn a profit and absorb some of these financial woes and stop with some of the really bad uncertainty and upheaval. 2025 is going to be huge, but 2026, if it happens, might be even bigger for the United Football League. Now, that does depend on profitability. The league needs more butts and seats. Ideally, I would like to see a minimum of 20,000 average per game for each team, with the Battlehawks still consistently getting their 35 billion people per game that they seem to get. But you would like to see more teams have higher attendance, consistent attendance, and consistent fan engagement to help the league draw a profit and grow and sustain itself. One of the biggest things we're hearing is talks of expanding the number of teams in 2026 or 2027. If the UFL is going to expand, in my opinion, they need to ensure that the new teams and the cities that those teams are playing in fulfill a few requirements. First of all, in order for a team to have good long-term attendance, a few things need to be true. Firstly, the city needs to have an appetite for spring football. Whether that's a desire to have a team again, thinking St. Louis or San Diego or Oakland, California, or there's a desire to have a team for the first time, like San Antonio, or maybe a team in Nebraska, or something like that. There has to be a desire for the fans in the cities to want the team. It can't be like how the Vegas Vipers were just a thing that happened in Las Vegas in 2023, and nobody cared, and it was irrelevant, and they were losing, and nobody cared. So second, the team itself needs to be good, accessible, and entertaining to watch. The Seattle Dragons in 2023 were really fun, and they had some of the best attendance, even if they were furthest away from everyone else in the league, because they were exciting. They had a great kind of air raid, run and shoot, throw the ball around kind of offense with Ben DiNucci and all these other quarterbacks. And it's one of these things where the reason the leagues didn't bring the Seattle Dragons back is because it was expensive to play in Lumen Field and fly the players 2,500 miles across the nation to play. But that's a city that's going to have to be a part of this if they want the league to be sustainable. That's just a reality of it. Another example would be like the San Diego Fleet of the Alliance of American Football had by far the highest attendance of any team in the fledgling league for how long it was playing. Fans really embraced the league because they were feeling sore over the fact that the Chargers left. The Chargers said, we don't like San Diego fans anyway. We're going to go shack up with our half-brother, the LA Rams, and go play in their field. So the fans felt really burned by that, and they wanted another team out of spite. And then the Alliance of American Football folded, and San Diego hasn't had another chance to have a league. Maybe San Diego is another team that you really want to get a new team so that fans have a desire to go to the games and wanting. And thirdly, the teams, and this one is really underrated that doesn't get talked about enough, the team has to play in a good stadium. The thing that doomed the Vegas Vipers is they were playing in a rickety old wooden ballpark in the middle of nowhere, where the football field was just in the middle of the baseball field, and there were no stands on one sideline, and the fans were just not there, and there was like a temporary view board, and the field looked like patchy carpet. It, like, there were bare spots, and the grass was half dead, and it just looked awful. And fans didn't want to come to a mediocre product, and the whole thing was bad from the start, and the Vegas Vipers just never came. But, like, on the other hand, the DC Defenders play in Audi Field in Washington, D.C., which is the home of the Washington, D.C.'s professional soccer team. And it's a small 25,000-seat soccer stadium with natural grass, and it's a very intimate, tight little stadium that has really good sight lines, and it's really modern, and the fans get crazy, crazy at Audi Field. And obviously, you've got the Dome in St. Louis, which is a very nice stadium where the fans love the place and it's easy to get to. Fourthly, the team needs to engage with the fans, craft local traditions, fan chants. The Battlehawks have Ka is Law. They say Ka is Law or Ka-Ka in the stands all the time. The DC Defenders have the giant beer snake in one end zone, or the throwing lemons, or dressing up as a lemon because there was one game where they were having some cocktail with lemons in it and fans were throwing them on the field, so then they banned the lemons, so then now people started dressing up as lemons when they were going to the game, and things like that that engage fans in the community and make them want to come back for a fun atmosphere where it's exciting and it's just something you want to care about. So many of these leagues just don't engage with the fans locally. They just don't put in the time to generate a fandom that gives a damn about the league. Especially for a small industry thing like spring football. If the fans don't give a crap, the league's never going to work. So those four things have to happen. You have to have a city that wants it. You have to have a team that's good and fun to watch. You have to have a stadium that matters. And you have to have a team that's willing to engage with the local population. If you have those four things, I think any expansion team can work. But you have to have those four things. Because the teams that are succeeding right now, Birmingham, DC, St. Louis, Seattle when they existed in the XFL, those teams have all four of those things. That's what's huge. And that's why teams like the Vegas Vipers, which I talked about, or the Orlando Guardians, or the LA Wildcats, or the Pittsburgh Maulers just didn't survive the merger. Because fans didn't care, the stadiums weren't really right, they were too big or too small, or they were too old. It just wasn't good. The product wasn't good on the field. It was one of those things where it was better just leave it be and just let it go. Moving on. If I was to choose where teams would go for expansion, I would like to see a team in San Diego. They obviously lost the Chargers, and they supported the Fleet. So I would like to see maybe the San Diego Admirals, or something fighter jet related, Top Gun related, because like MCRD San Diego and the naval base there are really huge, and there's a huge military presence in the city of San Diego. And another city I would like would be Oakland, California. The Raiders were there. The Raiders fans were super passionate about the Raiders. So put a team in Oakland, California. Make their colors black and silver. Make them call them like the Oakland Rangers or something else that's a two-syllable R name to really capture the Oakland Raiders fans. That way, they can wear their Raiders gear to games because it's black and silver. Do that. Help capture that lost, abandoned, forgotten base of fans in California. Because if you do that, those fans will love that team forever. Especially if the team is good. If the team is good, they'll be dedicated as hell, rivaling St. Louis or DC's fans. So do that. Go there. San Diego, Oakland, California. UFL, listen to me. I'm screaming into the void. Listen to me. Put teams in there in 2026. So what is the ultimate fate of spring football? Well, the United Football League shows promise, but its fate is ultimately up in the air because of the clear, undeniable obstacles that threaten its very existence. The same as those obstacles did for every other spring league that has given this thing a try. And it's one of those things where if they can pull this off, if the United Football League can survive to year 5, 2026, 2027, 2028, if they can do that, they'll be here to stay. They won't be going anywhere. It'll be like how we have the NHL or the Canadian Football League or the NBA. It'll just be another sports league that exists in American sports consciousness. And we can finally put this debate of can it work to rest, because it won't be can it work, it'll just be yeah, it worked. And I would love that. I think football fans everywhere would love to just end the will it work and just turn it into yeah, it totally worked. And I'm glad that it worked. That'll about do it for talk about spring football. So next week, I'm going to be doing a preview of the NCAA Men's College Basketball National Championship game, which is actually next Monday. So I will be doing a preview of the two teams that made it. I'll go through their rosters, their strengths and weaknesses, what they did during the regular season, all of that kind of thing to help people really understand their journey to the game and where they're going and where they've come from and everything you would need to know going into the game. And even as I'm kind of a casual, I'm going to give you all everything you could need to know about the national championship game, the end of March Madness. It's going to be great. All right. So I want to thank everyone who's watching on YouTube. I'm getting a lot of viewers on YouTube right now. It's actually nice. It's kind of growing. So I want to thank all of you who are watching on YouTube. Like, comment, subscribe, hit the bell icon, do all the things, share it with your friends, share it with your family, help me grow the channel. For those of you listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, every other podcast index out there, thank you, thank you, thank you. I know it's hard to find my podcast. It's really hard to find. So thank you for searching it out. Thank you for listening. Please share it with your friends, share it with your family, share it. Help me grow this thing so we can keep doing this and keep having fun talking about sports. All right. My name is H. James K. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time.